Forever Dog.
Rose and Jamie are two best friends,
and they love Sex and the City.
And they couldn't help but wonder,
do you love it too?
Carrie, Miranda, Samantha,
Charlotte,
Cosmos,
Emotions,
Frenchies,
dudes.
So many dudes.
Every little dude.
All the dudes.
And we couldn't help but wonder.
With Jamie Lee
and Rose Cerno.
I'm Jamie Lee.
And I'm Rose Cerno.
And this is
Couldn't
Help
but
wonder.
A podcast where we talk about Sex and the City and how it relates
to us. To us.
Hello there, dear.
Oh, hi, dear. How are you?
It's like so strange. Obviously, it's like so existential. I mean, the last time we recorded, there was a coup.
Yeah. That was just like a few days ago.
Yeah, we recorded mid-coup.
Mid-coup. Our first mid-coup episode.
We took a break from the coup.
Yeah, we did.
So it's kind of weird because it's like there is a part of me that feels bad for doing well or, you know, during like a horrific, scary time. But I do think that I've been doing well. I mean, who am I? I would say I'm kind of a Charlotte because I feel like of all the girls, Charlotte is the one who would be like on a regimen.
Mm.
And I feel like I've been on like a really good the last few days, like a self regimen of like, I get a good night's sleep, I wake up, I meditate, I journal for 20 minutes, make myself something to eat, I clean the house, I write, I exercise, I see a friend. So I just feel like during these times that are so scary, I'm always like super scared at night. Like before I go to bed every night, I'm like, oh my God, there's going to be an earthquake. Kill me. Like, I just think I'm having a lot of like existential fears.
Yeah. Well, I mean, LA is, you know, it's not 100% unfounded.
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I think it's just like the state of the world just feels so, it just feels
right. Like, it's like the anxiety just kind of like ripples into every area of your life.
Yeah. So it's not like I'm like anxiety free. I totally have anxiety. It really just comes right before I go to bed. But
yeah,
I feel like I'm doing a good job soothing myself and taking care of myself and creating a structure in my open time that feels safe and comfortable.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
I love that.
Who were you this week, or who do you feel like?
Oh boy, who was I this week? I guess I was a little. Oh God, who was I?
Well, how was your week?
Week was great. Week was great. I guess I'm a little bit of a Charlotte as well. Did you say you were Charlotte?
I said Charlotte because I felt like she has a regimen.
Yes, a regimen. I think I'm Charlotte a little bit in that Charlotte seems to kind of like, sometimes she's sort of head in the clouds a little bit and like seems like she's always kind of like trying to distract herself. And I think that I'm having trouble focusing in New York. I find that I'm more bored on a daily basis in Los Angeles. And
makes total sense.
Yeah, for work it's amazing because you're like, what else am I gonna do? Like, I'm just gonna go into my office and like hunker down and I'm just gonna like work because that's what you do here and that's what the industry is and that's why people move here is just for work. But then when I'm in New York, I feel like I got stuff done today, which was really good and kind of affirming. But I definitely have days where I'm just like, if I feel like I want to go do something, I can't. Like, there's actually, like, if you go for a walk, it really is like nice and you get to like see adorable neighborhoods and like you get to see people so you don't feel so isolated. Like, it's very easy to just kind of give in to every little whim you have here.
I think for someone like you, that's good because I think you skew so far the other way that I think it's good that you're skewing a little this way, a little.
Okay, thank you for saying that because I felt like the skew was like a guilty skew. Yeah,
well, that's an internal thing. I mean, you're one of the most successful friends I have. It's funny, you and Phoebe, I'm much closer to you. I love Phoebe, but I haven't been in touch with her in years. But both of you guys have an insane work ethic. Like, it's no surprise to me that you're both wildly successful. And I think that's amazing. But I think the only downside is just to make sure you also are giving yourself room to live life. That's it.
I think that's it. Oh my God. I think that is what it is. I think I have room to live life. And I
feel you're feeling
so
bad about it.
Guilty. Oh my God, Rose. Yeah, this is like a therapy breakthrough from not a therapist. Well, it really is like, I'm like, that's exactly what a friendipist. Yeah.
Skylar!
Put it on a sweatshirt. Friendipist.
Wait, a friendipist. That is as good as.
Friendipist is amazing. It also sounds kind of like some kind of insect.
Wait, what else was our, we had another good one. Was it intuitive cuties or what was our other?
Oh, Astuti cuties, we love.
Well, Astuti cuties is, I mean, that's a gold
standard.
We're
going to have a whole line, yeah.
Friendipist is like, honestly, Friendipist
is incredible.
I'm scared. Like, we have to like, Skylar, you have to like TM that before like the cut gets it. Cause it's like so good.
It is so good.
Wait, Skylar or Jamie or me or all of us. We all have to hurry up and write and like this sassy viral personal essay about this.
Okay,
before
great.
Anyone gets it. Because this is an Urban Outfitters book waiting to happen.
I mean, yeah, it's so true. It's such a great term. And you really are that. I mean, I definitely have. Yeah, I've just been feeling
guilty for enjoying yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it's just true. Like, I don't mind so much in the morning. I that like talking about routine and regimen, like. In the morning, I always wake up and go for a walk with my coffee, like usually for an hour. And it's amazing. And it's like the best way to start my day. But then if I take any like other walks, I'm like, if it's a day walk, I'm like, how dare I like walk during the day? I need to like just be in front of my computer. And like, yeah, I just need to not feel so bad.
Well, the thing that's really tough about workaholism and like capitalist productivity and like we're only valuable if we're working is like, unlike other addictions like alcoholism or drugs or sex, like we get rewarded for work addiction. Like society rewards us and people tell us that we're doing great. And so it's a really hard addiction to kind of like work with because you don't get a lot of criticism for it. You get a lot of praise for it, you know?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's, yeah, and that's definitely part of it. Imagine if, like, our society devalued work in some way. Like, I mean, God, like, my life would look so different.
This amazing Jewish Buddhist therapist and podcaster meditation teacher, Tara Brach, always says, like...
Oh, I love her.
Me too. She's always like, whenever people say they're busy, like, we're supposed to be like, wow. She's like, but a lot of times that's just distracting yourself from, like, how you actually feel or what
totally.
Your life is.
Totally, yeah.
But people are like, oh, she's in LA, especially. It's like, oh, you're busy? Wow, she must be really important.
Yeah, also, I mean, this is not the point she's making, but, like, just because you say you're busy, it's like, what does that even mean? Like, maybe you just don't manage your time well.
Yeah.
Or I just think that, like, overbooking yourself in whatever regard is sort of an anxious attempt at sort of running
yes,
something.
I would agree with that. I would agree with that. I've definitely caught myself sometimes where I'm like, I have a free hour. What will I do? And then the second the hour comes, I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't put something in this hour. I like,
well,
it.
You and I need to both read this book and I don't remember the title, but I'll find it and email to us, or maybe I'll put it on the Instagram for the pod if other listeners are experiencing this too. But there's a book about how to like just be a little and like how to kind of not fall victim to like the psychotic like capitalist
grind
economy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I think there's a difference between like I'm passionate about this, I need to pay my bills, I'm working, that's all totally normal, and like oh no, it's Sunday, I should be working all day, you know?
Oh yeah, no, I'm working on this movie that I'm writing and I set a schedule for myself, and the schedule's like very attainable. It's like write like 2 pages a day or something. It's like not I intentionally made it easy for that. I might have talked about this on another episode, I can't remember, but anyways, I didn't adhere to the schedule for 2 days this weekend. And I was like, so mad at myself. I'm like, I cannot believe it. Like, you didn't get work done on the weekend. Like, what are you doing? And
my old therapist told me, she was like, Rose, you have to take 1 day off of work a week. And honestly, it was like painful for me. And it gave me so much anxiety. And I was like, I can't do it. I'm much better at it now. But at the time she was like, Rose, you cannot work 7 days a week. Even if you're passionate about it, even if you like what you do, it's work. You have to.
Yeah, but I also was like kind of fucking around on Friday. Like I was just like not that productive Friday through Sunday.
You are a wildly productive person. So
I don't know about that.
I'm never going to be worried about that for you. I'm happy that you're dicking around a little. I think that's good for you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the sign off on my new lifestyle.
Hi, everybody. Tim Heidecker here. To tell you about episode 292 of Office Hours Live with our special guest, documentary filmmaker Lance Oppenheim, and musical guests, Melinda Sullivan and Larry Goldings. You can find us on your podcast app of choice. Goodbye.
And at youtube.com.
And at youtube.com/goodbye.
Slash office hours live.
Okay, I love you, and let's begin.
I love you, and also, I agree that we should begin as well.
Great. So today, we are covering season 6, episode 10, Boy Interrupted. Rose.
Also, I must say, I never really watched the X-Files, and I know that David Duchovny in, like, the 90s and 2000s was considered, like, a wild, sexy guy. And I never really got it, but in this episode, I'm like, oh, he is sexy. I didn't know really? That before. Oh, you don't think?
He's fine.
Yeah. I don't think he's, like, insane, but I'm like, okay, I get why people were, like, horny for him.
Yeah, I think also for that time, he has that thing where he's kind of, like, kind of has, like, a smoky, smoldering.
Yeah, smoke. Yes. Yeah.
One of my favorite little tiny, tiny David Duchovny roles that kind of plays on that is when he is, like, he's the one who, like, brings Derek Zoolander into the whole conspiracy plot in Zoolander.
Oh, that's right.
I don't remember that.
That's right. That was so fun. Oh, God, that movie's perfect.
It's so funny.
Truly hilarious. Okay.
So.
Yeah, take us in.
The episode kicks off with Carrie catching up with an old flame, her high school boyfriend, Jeremy, played by David Duchovny. He's in town, so they decide to meet up for dinner. Over at Miranda's, she gets a knock on the door from the gorgeous Dr. Leeds. He has two tickets to next week's Knicks game, and he wants to see Miranda there. He gives her both the tickets, which kind of confuses her. Is this a date, or should she bring someone else?
Carrie and Jeremy wrap up dinner with a walk back to her place, which they cap off with their first kiss since high school. And then the next day, Samantha struggles through the summer heat when she runs into her friend Phoebe. Phoebe is just leaving the pool at Soho House.
There's a pool a block from my apartment and I can't get in.
What pool?
At the Soho House. You have to be a member and I'm on some kind of bullshit wait list.
Don't they know who you are?
And more importantly, who we are, who need to be at the pool with you.
You know, in high school, all you had to do was jump a fence and you could be in somebody's pool.
Oh, speaking of high school, I saw my high school sweetheart and I think I might like him again. Is that crazy?
No, I love this.
You could end up with your high school boyfriend.
Okay, let's not jump the gun. But it was the best date that I've had in a long time, and I wasn't even thinking that it was a date. Oh, and when he kissed me goodnight.
He kissed you goodnight?
It was wild because I actually remembered what it felt like to kiss him.
Imagine if you slept with him. Talk about a homecoming.
No. We never went all the way.
Why not?
Because we were kids. We wanted to wait. And now, I think we waited long enough.
You're marrying him.
Will you stop? He doesn't even live in New York. He lives in Denver.
People move. It would be so romantic.
Or tragic. Seriously, if I had the guy in high school, what have I been doing for the past 20 years?
Why did you two break up?
I broke up because I thought, come on, there must be better guys out there. Turns out, what? There aren't.
I just have to say, this is like
a lot happening. There's a lot happening in this scene.
This is a really minor, like, writer's observation, but this is the second episode in a row where she goes, speaking of which, and they literally, like, write in a transition.
Yes, speaking of which.
Kind of crazy. It's almost like a stand-up thing, like.
Yeah.
It's such a
What else? My high school boyfriend. Yeah. Yeah, I know. That is, it's a little, it's writerly. I would agree. So, I wanted to talk about the pool for a second because I have found myself in New York City dying to go in a swimming pool. And like, it is tough here. Like all these hotels, I mean, Soho House is its own thing. You have to be a member. You have to join. But all of the pools at the hotels, they have these like day passes and
get a day pass.
It's not easy. I remember when I was here filming Crashing 2 summers ago, like I was told the William Vale had a really great pool and I like called them up and they're like, yeah, our day passes. They were like hundreds of dollars. And I'm like,
oh shit,
for one day at your pool. Like, but I remember feeling very landlocked in New York City. So I understand their need to just like see a swimming pool.
There is a hotel in Koreatown in LA.
Oh, we went.
Yeah, called The Line. Yeah, and for a while you had to pretend to be a hotel
guests to use the pool. So me and my friends would just go all the time and just try and pretend we were there. And then eventually, I think, because it just hadn't caught on yet because it was in Koreatown. Yeah. It was just like, it wasn't like in Hollywood. But that was, I mean, I do have to say, sitting by a hotel pool and like ordering a drink and a burger and like swimming is like fucking phenomenal. And then just like tanning. It's such a fun time.
Just staring at like blue pool water is amazing. Serene. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just kind of fabulous. It's like, it's kind of one of those like young, fabulous things to do.
Yeah. Agreed. Also, I loved that this Phoebe, the friend who belongs to Soho House, was played by Baby Spice. That was a
That's
fun
who that was.
Cameo. Yeah.
Because I didn't understand why she was British. I was like, this is odd. But that makes sense.
Because Soho House started in England. So I guess when this episode came out, like it had just hit.
They were like, yeah,
New
what
York,
other cities have
and
a
it was
Soho?
Like a really, yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Would you ever like join a Soho House, Rose?
Oh, fuck yeah. I was thinking of joining the one in LA.
Yeah.
I totally would. I think it's a, well, yeah, because it's like every writer is different. I love writing in like a bustly environment.
Yes. Same.
I love having people like hustling and bustling around me. And it's also kind of like the older I get, the more I'm like, fuck, writing somewhere beautiful with a view is so amazing. And the view there in LA.
It's unreal.
Yeah. It just gets
and
you excited.
Really good. Yeah.
I think anything that gets you excited to work is like a phenomenal investment.
Yeah. I think the LA one, I've only been there twice.
It's beautiful.
But it is beautiful. It's just a bit much. Like, if there was one in Silver Lake or something.
You mean because it's just a drive?
Well, the drive to get there, yes. But also, I just think, like, it's so sceney and, like, hustle bustle that I think there's just part of me that, like,
it's a little gross.
Can't fully submit to that type of Hollywood at this juncture.
I know what you mean.
It, like, stresses me out.
There was a nice private club for women called the Jane.
That place is awesome. I worked there a couple times.
Yeah, I went with my friend Melissa and it was beautiful. But as a single person, I was like, I don't need to like spend all my days just around women. So I was like, I need to be in like a co-ed environment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
I do have to say, I think it's really cute that I can definitely relate to Charlotte in the scene where she's like, yeah, my high school boyfriend. She's like, you're going to marry him.
Yeah.
Because I'm such a romantic. If somebody like meets someone in a cute way or if I like see a guy on a walk and then like later he asks me out, I'm like, we're getting married. Like I feel like the first thought I have whenever I like someone or if something's romantic is like marriage.
Isn't it funny?
It's so childish. It's
like,
so silly.
No, but I have those thoughts too. And then like, it's interesting that we still go to marriage as the be all end all, because it's like, not that it can't be, it absolutely can be, but it is funny because in our culture, just generally in our culture, I don't think we make marriage look amazing. Like, well, as Americans, I think other countries do.
A lot of marriages aren't.
No. But I mean, in terms of like in the media, it's never portrayed as like, it's always like Marriage Story, like they're divorced and they're,
right.
You know, or it's like a marriage in a sitcom and it's
where
like,
it's like naggy.
Yeah, naggy. And you're just like, it's so funny that even with all of that and also knowing people whose marriages are like all of it, we're still like, oh, marriage. It's so interesting.
You know why, Jamie? Because we're saying the word marriage, but what I think it is
like
this is
forever after.
Yeah, I
is
do.
Is that what we mean by marriage?
I think
is
so.
The foreverness?
I think that like every human being has existential anxiety and like everyone is afraid. And I think the idea of like marriage, I think it's a euphemism for like security and someone who's always going
to
be there for you.
Right.
And
right.
It's kind of like, I'm not alone anymore. I don't have to like travel this world alone anymore.
Right.
That's what I think. That's
right,
why I think
right.
we go
it's
to
like
it.
It's like the nest you're building that is the thing that you're pregnant.
I think so. I think
not you
so.
Specifically, but like that's the thing that we are referring to when we have fantasies.
Exactly. Yeah. I think. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's well said.
Cool.
Okay. Okay.
Okay. So
okay.
Later, Samantha heads to Soho House to get her own membership sorted out. Unfortunately, they can't help her. They aren't taking any new members at the moment, so she'll just have to wait. Before Samantha leaves, she uses the restroom where a cleaning woman gives her the in that she needs. Annabelle Bronstein's membership card, which she assumes Samantha dropped. Samantha heads to the pool the very next day as Annabelle. Also, I love that Jewish last name Bronstein, and then the first name is Annabelle. It's a really psychotic name.
Yeah, absolutely. No one's named that. That yeah. has never been an actual name.
It's like Natalie Bronstein, okay. Or like Annabelle Winters, fine. But Annabelle right. Bronstein, you're confused, girl.
Yeah, a little bit. I know. I was trying to think of like the opposite. Like, what's a Jewish first name with a super, super non-Jewish
Miriam
last name?
Stevens?
Kind of, yeah. Yeah. Well, what is the one I'm thinking? Yeah.
Shayna Winterbottom.
That actually sounds still Jewish to me. It's like more like Shayna McCarthy or something.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh, my God, the Jewish Jenny McCarthy. Remember when Jenny McCarthy came out onto the scene and everyone's like, wait a minute, a blonde with big tits burps? I'm in.
I know.
And then she comes out against vaxxers and you got to go the other
and
way.
People
around.
Are like, I've never been more in.
Yeah. A certain type of person was like, oh, she's still killing it for me.
Yeah. They're like, oh, just when I thought it couldn't get any hotter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her whole humor was like, I'm hot. And also, like, that was like, she like became a millionaire off of that.
I'm laughing so hard.
She's your OG guys girl.
Oh, I've said it before, but I wish you did stand up because I really want you to do a bit on that. God, is that funny. Okay, well, anyways, Charlotte heads to lunch with Anthony at the hot new restaurant cafeteria. As it happens, Stanford and Marcus are also there. They stop by to say hi on their way out, but Anthony really leans into giving them a hard time. He explains why when they leave. Anthony saw Marcus in an old escort ad. Charlotte's skeptical, but Anthony is 100% sure it was Marcus, and he's going to send her the ad to prove it.
Okay, this is kind of like a depressing thing, but I just have to say, it's so sad that like all these gay actors from then until now, like steal every scene they're in. They should be the headline of their own show. And it's just like, wow, how much talent people of color, queer people just have been sidelined. Like, just, I mean, Mario Cantone should be a billionaire superstar, in my opinion.
I really do think that if they're smart, they're going to make him a huge part of the reboot.
I fucking hope so.
I have a feeling. I just have a feeling.
Yeah, I hope
I don't
you're right.
know. I think they have a lot of opportunity to right their wrongs.
Well, this is a side note, but if anybody watches the show Flight Attendant, there's a gay character on it, and he's so funny and so good, and he gets 30 seconds of screen time an episode, and I'm just like, damn, we gotta fix this. These are stars that we're just not using.
Right.
One of the things I'm curious about with Anthony, just because, and also, like, there's still 10 episodes in original run, so maybe it'll get resolved, but I'd never really understand, and this scene really underlined it to me, like, what his animosity towards Stanford is about. Because he's like really aggro.
Yeah, he's not.
I think it's just self-hating. Okay. I think he's like a super self-hating gay, and you know, all his friends are straight women, and that's my guess.
Totally.
That night, Miranda takes Charlotte to see the Knicks. That looked really fun, by the way. Yeah. While they watch Charlotte
at a Knicks game. It's like, okay.
Amazing. You could see Charlotte at a tennis game, not a Knicks game.
No, no.
While they watch, Charlotte shows Miranda Marcus's ad, and they both agree to keep it from Stanford. They also check out Dr. Leeds, who definitely seems interested in Miranda, or at least he does until the Knicks cheerleaders come out. Dr. Leeds and one of the cheerleaders flirt pretty aggressively, so Miranda ends up leaving without even saying hello, which I totally would have done the same.
Oh, God, I would have been out of there in 3 seconds. Especially, same. You already lost me at a basketball game. Now I have to watch you flirt.
Yeah, I would be devastated to see that.
No. Over at Carrie's, she and Jeremy make out. Carrie wants to have sex, but he has to tell her something first. He's not really in New York taking time off work. He's there between treatments at a mental institution. Carrie discusses his news at Soho House the next day.
I wanted a man who would commit, not a man who was committed. Apparently, we have to be more specific. But how was he able to see you?
Ooh, did he escape?
No, he's voluntary. He says it's not really a mental institution. It's a therapeutic community.
Which one?
Juno Spears?
Well, that's supposed to be a good one. I've had clients go there.
Really? Why haven't we heard about that?
Because I'm good at my job. No one wants to admit they're in a loony bin.
On a first date.
It's all humiliating.
Think about what we have to go through to date. I am 38, and I am competing with a cheerleader.
Yeah, and even when you get the guy, you never know what fun surprise might be revealed.
Let me tell you something, ladies. In a good relationship, there are no surprises. I know everything about Marcus, and Marcus knows everything about me.
I don't think he knows everything.
What? What?
Charlotte, like all girls, learned at an early age that the only way to get rid of information you don't want to have is to pass it on.
Ah, so true.
Oh my God. Is this real?
Anthony found it in an old issue of Poncho magazine.
Let me see that.
Poncho?
My! Marcus?
What is that?
Nothing.
Okay, hand it over. Okay, hand it over. Where did this come from? Someone better tell me where this came from right now. I'm not kidding.
I got it from Carrie.
I got it from Miranda.
I got it from Charlotte.
I got it from Anthony, but I told him that you and Marcus were very much in love.
You know, I have to say, I know we just ended on the Marcus Anthony thing, Stanford thing, but I'm still thinking of the her talking to her girlfriends about how this guy is committed in a mental institution. And I have to say, like, there's so many reasons why the show's so great, but like, they really cover so many potential things that could happen when you're dating somebody. And I feel like even though it's TV, so maybe things seem extreme, I don't think it's that. I don't know. I feel like there's enough people out there where this is relatable, and dating somebody with like severe mental problems or like who's in a time in an institution. I'm sure I have friends who have been there. Like it's weirdly not as crazy as it. It's weird to use the word crazy.
I don't
think it's as rare as people might think, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's right. I mean, maybe at the time of this episode, you know, it was I'm curious. I can't really say what the temperature was when this came out, like if this was in any way like groundbreaking
or shocking.
Yeah, I remember I'm trying to channel watching it for the first time. I always didn't like this episode, actually. I don't know what it was. I think it's just the David Duchovny storyline. I love the rest of the episode. I love like the Soho house and all of that. But I don't know. There's something about him and Carrie. I didn't like it. I didn't like when she went to visit him, and I don't know, at the whatever mental institution. I don't know. There was something about it that I just remember, like, I don't know. Something about it creeped me out. I still can't put my finger on it.
The visit's a little upsetting.
Maybe that's what it is.
I actually like it. I actually like it because, like, I don't know, I guess because of some of the worlds that I am in, I just know a lot of people with a lot of trauma, and I guess what I like about it is it feels realistic, and I also think that like Carrie has such a bad sense of who would be a good partner that I think it's also really relatable to like find somebody who's like in crisis, who needs help, and to like just like think that you could do that. Like in the end she doesn't stay with him, but even in the beginning she's kind of still, after he tells her that he's in a mental institution, she still pursues it. And
yeah.
I don't think that's me today, but I think that would have been me a few years ago, if not even a year ago.
I think I like and agree with what you're saying, Rose. Because I like the storyline. I think it's an interesting bit of territory for them to cover. But to your point, Jamie, I think it, especially when she goes and visits him, it gets a little scary, honestly.
Yes,
and I think
that's what it is.
Territory is just, it doesn't quite feel like the show is generally a little, it's pretty
escapist.
Light. So it's
totally, I think that's what it's, I think it just didn't feel, it felt like a little bit of a different show to me.
Yeah. I think it's interesting.
But they
try
to shoehorn it into, yeah, no, I think the territory is awesome. I completely agree. I think it's maybe that
it's a little dark.
Just the jolt of sort of like dose of reality within this very escapist.
That's interesting.
World, I think maybe, because it was never like, I don't like that they're
talking. It's not as fun as many other episodes.
I think it was always just a little like, yeah, it's really when she goes to visit him, I remember just being like,
The thing that's interesting about this stuff is, like, I think it's really cool that he's so open about it. I think it's cool that, like, yeah, they say some un-PC stuff, like loony bin and stuff, but
yes,
she's ultimately pretty open about it. I think, like, she really gives him a chance. And it's interesting because it's like, I think in reality, like, everyone deserves a chance romantically, depending on, like, he's not ready now, but, like, if that person finishes through, gets healthy, and then comes to the other side, I think there's no reason why that character couldn't find love. I am the kind of person where, like, I feel like I'm more interested in finding somebody who, like, isn't sober or hasn't gone through anything like that, because I feel like I have enough on my plate. But if I was, like, a super steady rock that was, like, extremely steady, then I think being with someone like that would be fine. Like,
yeah,
that's my thought.
Okay, well, we get back into it.
Let's do it.
Okay.
So after Stanford wanders off to deal with the Marcus news, a very British man stops by to ask for Annabelle. Of course, Samantha claims that she's Annabelle, but the lie unravels quickly when the guy says he knows Annabelle and Samantha is definitely not her. The Core Four plus Stanford take off.
And back at Miranda's building, she runs into Dr. Leeds while getting her mail. He asks where she took off to after the game, and she explains she didn't want to pull him away from the hot cheerleader. Dr. Leeds, however, wishes Miranda had, and he proves it with a kiss, which gets broken right up when one of their neighbors shows up for their mail.
Okay, I have to face some internalized misogyny here.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the same reaction I had to that Famous Girls episode where, like, that smoking hot actor was, like, really into Lena Dunham for a weekend. Mm. And I was kind of like, really? I sort of had that feeling about this. Like, oh, really? He wasn't into that cheerleader. He's into Miranda. But that says more about me than it does about the show.
Okay. Well,
just saying.
I appreciate the admission. I think it's also, I think it says a lot about Dr. Leeds' character.
Yeah. He wants the real thing.
He wants the real thing. I think he also, the vibe I got is that he definitely has, like,
fucked that girl before.
Cheerleaders. Not her necessarily, but I think he's had his fair share because he's a very handsome man and he works in that world. And, you know, I mean, yes. I feel like everybody has kind of, like, dipped their toe in, like, the office ink, like,
right. Yes.
A little bit, you know, totally. Over the years. So it's kind of like, I just think he's like, yeah, I did it. And that's not what I'm looking for.
That's interesting. Yeah, you're probably right.
It is interesting that he does flirt with the cheerleader, though, because, like, you would think, to your point, Jamie, that, like, if he has that experience, he's like, he's not even really going to put it out there. But he's kind of, like, leading Miranda on in
That's
weird ways this
what
whole episode.
I think. He gives it back. He's not just getting it.
True. But he also might
He does
just
look at her like she's a tasty pork chop.
Yeah, he does. I mean, I don't know. I also think he might just be a
flirt.
That could be.
He might just be a little bit of a flirt.
Which is totally fair.
Yeah. I definitely know those types. So anyways, okay.
So then Carrie catches up with Jeremy at her place. He stops by to explain himself and to give her a bag of marbles in case he loses any more of his. Carrie appreciates him being open and self-deprecating, and they end up making out and having sex after all. Miranda and Dr. Leeds, meanwhile, have some sex of their own.
Stanford stops by Carrie's to talk about him and Marcus. Stanford's pretty understanding of Marcus's escorting. What he cannot accept is that Marcus kept it a secret. So Stanford broke it off. Unfortunately, he did so right before the prom, the major GLBT Center fundraiser he's helping put on. So now he needs a date. He asks Carrie to come and she can't. She already committed to checking out Jeremy's treatment facility.
Wait, before you even go on, just the amount of shit that Stanford has done for Carrie, and she, like, he literally asked her to do one thing, and she's like, I can't, because, like, the guy I'm fucking, it's, like, so bad.
He's just there to, like, service her.
100%. He's such a ragdoll.
Yeah, he is.
It's kind of nice, huh? Mm-hmm. There are great hiking trails all around here. Maybe later we can do a hike.
Oh, I don't really hike.
Neither do I. But I will fill you in on something I discovered. Hiking is walking.
Really?
Yes, hiking is walking.
I started to think maybe the Juno Spears Center should be mandatory for New Yorkers, like the Hamptons or Fire Island.
Feces! Feces! Feces!
Get it!
Feces! 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 Feces!
I guess that doesn't happen very often at Canyon Ranch, huh?
I've never been. Yeah. It might.
Who am I kidding? This is a full-on psychiatric facility.
With Pilates. Oh. You're definitely the sanest person here.
Well, thank you. That's kind of like being the best house on a bad block. People would advise you against buying it. Maybe it wasn't the wisest thing to start something while I was still in here. Maybe when I get out in 8 to 10 months.
8 to 10 months?
Yeah, my doctor still thinks I have a lot of work to do. And to be honest with you, I'm comfortable here. I kind of like it. I like that everybody's craziness is out in the open.
Yeah. I love seeing you.
I love seeing you again. But I understand. We're just in very different places right now.
Ironically, it was the sanest breakup I ever had.
I like that breakup. I thought it was great.
I love that is the, like, I love that.
That was clever.
That really got me.
And you know what else I liked about it? It wasn't like disrespectful, like, you know what? I realize he's way too crazy. He's the one who's like, you know what? I don't think this is a great idea, which I think is cool. Cause like the
Me
expected
too.
Thing would be to her to be like, wow, that guy is screaming. I got to get out of here. But it wasn't, it was like, and I think what else I like about this scene in this episode is like mental health. There's so many more conversations about it now than there ever have been, but it's still highly stigmatized. And I think thinking of people with mental health issues as the other, like a crazy person, as somebody who had a nervous breakdown, it's like, I truly believe that anyone can lose it at any time. And that like, there's really nothing, no difference between like me and the person screaming on the street. It's just like luck and habit and, you know, genetics and whatever.
Support.
Yeah exactly. And like opportunity and all this great stuff. And, you know, so I think it's really cool that despite like the disrespectful comments from the girls, like in general, he's treated pretty respectfully on the show. Like,
yeah,
he's
right.
Treated like she takes him seriously as a candidate. They decide in a mature way together that it's not the right thing. I think it's a very respectful portrayal in a weird way.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think that they definitely mind the humor when they had the guy screaming feces, like that was definitely their, I think at the time, their way of being like, and then this funny thing happens at the facility. And you're like, it's not funny. It's actually the reason this storyline is like, I think it really bums me out. I get really sad. And I think honestly, it's that joke makes me sad.
It was like, interesting hearing it because it was like the first thing that felt, I did like a tear. I usually watch the episode like right before, but I watched like 4 or 5 of them like 2 weeks ago. So it's not as fresh. But so just hearing him scream feces, actually, I think was not the best way to show a crazy person because somebody screaming to themselves definitely feels real. But I feel like screaming feces is what a person who has no experience in like mental health problems would like think they would say.
Yeah, it feels broad.
Yeah, it does.
It felt broad. It's like, and then a guy starts screaming shit while they're on their date. It's like,
yeah.
I think honestly, we've tapped into the reason I don't like the storyline. And I think it could be boiled down to that single moment. I really I'm not trying to sound like a fucking hero. I think probably everybody would feel this way to an extent, but like, I don't like humor about mental illness. Like, I don't like making fun of like,
unless it's like Maria Bamford and you're talking about your own experience.
Yeah. Oh, yourself is fair game. I'm talking about, I don't like the like, isn't it funny how they're crazy?
Yeah.
Like it's honestly always bummed me out. I don't think I was even able to articulate it until right now, but that is 100% what I don't. It's not because he's getting help for his problems. It's not even him. I really just don't like that setting. I don't like that they tried.
You don't like that they're making they're in some ways
like
poking fun of it. Yeah.
100% they did that. Like it's just, I mean, they could have had that person. They could have also not had that. They didn't really need to show like he's in a mental home. It's like, we know, like he's at a rehab. Like this is really about him and Carrie. Like, I don't know. I don't think you need a moment of levity necessarily there. And I know there've been other breakups on the show and there wasn't a moment of levity. So I think, you know, like with Berger, it wasn't funny. It's like, they just like had a weird break or that the first time when he like was at the in the Hamptons and they had that run in and he like, I don't know.
I agree that it was disrespectfully portrayed. I do think though, seeing somebody like go, you know, have a meltdown in the background is still useful to their story because I think it just sobers them both up. I just think that the way that it was handled, I think with a lot of good, grounded, heartfelt comedies, it's like you're always threading the needle between like putting a joke in and having a moment. And it's a really tough thing. And even in great shows, there are scenes where it's like, it's a little hackier than you needed to be. You could have just let the moment breathe. But I think for a lot of comedy writers, it's really hard to trust that it'll be okay if it's just not that funny in the moment.
Right. Oh, no, 100%. I totally get the instinct to want to like lighten that up somehow.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it's just in general. Yeah, it felt sort of like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest versus
I hear you.
More like nuanced modern portrayal or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so interesting because I hadn't even, when I was watching it, this was my first time seeing it. Mm-hmm. It didn't even occur to me that that was a joke. Like it occurred, I immediately thought that that was just like, this is like sort of what reality would be.
Maybe it's not a joke. I don't know what they were thinking with that.
I don't know. But
I felt like that was, I think because of what he was screaming, I could see them thinking it was kind of funny. That was the vibe I got.
Yeah.
That was probably the other thing that like, to that point, it made me really uncomfortable to consider that like a bunch of writers.
That's what I'm saying. Yep.
Rich. Right.
That's the point. That's the part that I don't like.
Also, probably just like, I mean, I hate to be shitty to people who were writing 20 years ago, but just like in a room, like, what's the funniest word we can have this unwell person scream?
Yeah,
and
totally.
Just like run through
that's
all the alts.
How it feels. Yeah. Well,
that's the thing is it's like there's so much privilege. Like anyone who's writing on a TV show is making 10 times more than most people all over the world. It's like you're just privileged no matter what your deal is. So there's always something kind of yucky about the idea of people who are highly educated and doing well being like,
yeah.
Even though I don't think that was the idea.
No,
and again, like Skylar said, it was so long ago and I like to consider things like that when we're analyzing them. It's not like this was made this week, you know?
Yeah, that's totally true.
And also like to the earlier point too, I think like they do, like to be totally generous to them, they went into this storyline. Like that is like still a good thing.
And I think
that
most
they did.
Of it
I
is
think
great.
They weren't as shitty as they could have been with it.
No. Yeah. And I think that ultimately the way they treated David Duchovny's character was extremely respectful, which is, that's the most important part of that storyline.
Yeah. Totally.
Okay, so back in the city, Carrie makes it to Stanford's prom after all. They take prom queen and prom queen. So all in all, it's a pretty sweet bash. It ends up even sweeter when Marcus shows up. At first, Stanford refuses to speak to him, but Marcus makes his case. He didn't tell Stanford about escorting because it was in his past and Stanford is in his future. The episode closes with the two of them dancing and Carrie drinks punch and dances alone.
And this brings us to the question of the episode.
That night, I started thinking about my retro relationship. Since high school, most women I know have acquired much better taste in clothes, hairstyles, and food. But what about in men? Maybe we were better off when we thought less and kissed more. Have we graduated past our ability to find true love when it comes to matters of the heart? Did we have it right in high school?
What do you think, James and Sky?
I think some of it, there was definitely like a level of like sweetness and just like that feeling of firsts that happened in high school. And that is something I would like to see more of in adulthood. Obviously, you can't have firsts when you've already had the things. But that feeling of like, oh, my God, it's happening. Like, I think it mostly it probably is just romance, I guess. But like that to me feels like something you would hope to have in an adult relationship that reminds me of high school.
I also think that something that's kind of interesting about this question and that this episode kind of skirts around is like, I do have friends who like got together in high school and like got married and are like still together and that sort of thing. And that I never entirely know what to make of that because I met Kristen in college. We admittedly have been together for effectively like in terms of like maturity when we met, it's not that different from meeting someone in high school, but I always just wonder like if you go out and date as an adult, like your experiences are different, your expectations of your partner are different. But if you met someone in high school and didn't date around before that, I never really know what to make of that as an outsider looking in on that. And so I think that sometimes people get like stunted views of what a relationship should be as a result of sticking with a high school partner or something along those lines. And that's the thing that like always makes me bristle against a question like this. Like, did we have it right in high school? It's like, I don't know, because if you're with the person you were with in high school, did you ever really like test other things? And have you gotten to a total understanding of like what a relationship is or can't?
Does that ever trip you up, Skylar, that you found your person so early?
It definitely like it did when we like started out dating, certainly, where I was just like, because to your earlier point too, Rose, when you said, because I certainly had that thing where when you start seeing someone, you think like, oh, this could just be the person I just stay with. Right. And there is like a fear component to that too, where it's like, well, is this the right person? Am I settling in some way? Am I like kneecapping my decision making in some way? But luckily, and I feel very lucky, it does feel like a fortunate thing. Like, Kristen and I are very comfortable and very like solid together. And but not everybody gets that. Right. So my experience, I don't want to like externalize and universalize from, but I to answer your question about whether or not I ever get like freaked out about that. I did early. I don't currently. Mm.
That's really nice to hear.
That's amazing. That does feel like when that would set in is like initially.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like that's definitely an initial reaction of like, fuck.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, is this about to like be something?
Yeah, you're in love. You love each other. You're great for each other. So then there's not as much fear.
Yes, 100%.
I think for me, it's an interesting question because I think of the two guys that I really loved in high school. And one of them, I think, was like a secure partner who would have been a really good partner. But I literally, have I already told the story about this, about my body shame stopping me from being with him?
I don't think so.
Okay, there was a boy who really liked me in high school, and I also really liked him. And I think he was like a really gentle, wonderful boy. And we were like working on a Spanish project at his house, and I knew that he liked me and I liked him too. But I was so skinny and flat chested in high school. I mean, I literally had the chest of like a boy or a girl who was like a child. Mm. And I had so much shame about my body. I was so embarrassed about it. I thought it was just like really, the shame was like at an all time. And it really freaked me out about like kissing a boy or letting anyone touch me, because I was like, if he touches me, he's gonna like, I just was horrified. Mm. So we were at his house once and he was just staring at me, and his parent, he had a childhood like me. He was with his mom who was single and she was at work. So it was just us at his house, and he was just looking at me, and I knew that he like loved me. And I was like, what are you thinking? And he was like, nothing. And there was just this moment where it's like, if I had been brave, something would have happened. And I really wanted it to, but I just was like so full of like fear and doubt and shame that, wow, I can't believe I made you sneeze.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You got sneeze emotional.
An emotional sneeze. Wow.
Yeah. And so nothing could have happened. And then years later, I was like, oh my God, did he like get away? But he, I think, is an example of like a good choice of a partner. Like, I've made so many bad choices in my adult life, but he seemed like a really loving guy. But the other guy that I was totally in love with in high school was my typical type, which is like brilliant, hilarious, so damaged, so broken. Like, and that is just very indicative of the kind of guys I've been with many, many times over. So I would say high school, I had half bad choice in terms of like my instincts were to be with somebody who was unavailable, and then half my instincts were to be with somebody who was available, but then my shame melted me down. So I don't know if I'm better or worse than that, but that was my high school experience. I couldn't let a soul touch me until college. And once I got into college, there was a really dorky guy across the hall from me who like I knew liked me. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to make out with him because I don't like him. And I'm not like, I don't care if he thinks I'm cool or if I'm bad at any of these things. So I like got my make out virginity.
He was your practice guy.
Yeah, because I was like, if that's I'm good. Bad at this, then there's no stakes. But of course, as you know, it's hard to be good at kissing and stuff when you're not that into somebody.
No, so hard.
Okay, so that was my big wrap up story.
Okay, I loved it. I loved every second. Okay, well, final segment I'm horny for. Sex in the City is obviously a very horny show, so we end each episode by sharing what we are currently horny for. Rose, what are you horny for right now?
I have a double.
Okay.
I'm 37. I will be 38 this year. So I was at the perfect age to be obsessed with The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I watched that show religiously growing up. I
loved that show.
I thought it was brilliant at the time. I think it's brilliant now. I think it's like one of the best comedies of all time. There is the most emotional, most beautiful Fresh Prince of Reunion hour-long special on HBO Max that literally I cried through the whole thing. It made me so inspired and so excited about like writing for television and like what television can do. And that group of people like loved each other so much. What they did was so incredible. And if you grew up watching that show, it is a must watch.
Like, okay, I'm gonna watch it. I'll watch it today.
Yes. And then my second recommendation is also on HBO Max. It's The Flight Attendant, which is a really fun show. It's kind of part of this new genre like Search Party, where it's like a comedy thriller. And it's really exciting and sexy and fun. It's a total blast. It's a Greg Berlanti show, so the same people that did You. So it has a really fresh, original take. But I like binged watched Flight Attendant, and it is a little creepy and scary, so I had to cleanse my palate with The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air Reunion. So those are my horny fours.
Those are good. Those are two very different things. So they're like good component pieces.
Yeah, because I can't go to sleep, even if it's a comedy, with the last thing I've watched was like any kind of murdery thing.
I get that.
Jamie, what was your horny for?
I'm horny for a movie on Netflix. Yeah, it's called Pieces of a Woman, and it stars Vanessa Kirby, who is a very brilliant British actress. And I can give a little bit of the plot, but it's about a woman who has a home birth gone wrong. And the
repercussions
of that.
That sounds like a horror film.
It kind of is. I mean, it's just really well done, and it definitely is sad and, you know, very dramatic and emotional, but it was really well done. The acting's really great. And yeah, it's just one of these movies where I'm like, I feel like, you know, if movies were in theaters right now, I would walk out of the theater being like, wow, that was really good. But there's always a level of not feeling that way when you're watching something at home. It just kind of like makes it a little anticlimactic, I guess. Just the nature of watching movies in our living room. But but it was really good. So Pieces of a Woman on Netflix. Recommend it.
And all of our listeners have messaged us, Instagrammed us. We are aware Sex and the City is coming back, if you can possibly
coming back, baby.
Fucking believe it. There's like a small little trailer. I think this is so exciting for many reasons. Obviously, number one, because we're all obsessed with the show. But number two, if this goes well, this could bode really well for stories about women in their 50s, which I would love to see more of.
Me too. That is a really good point.
Yeah, it's like, you know, what a dream come true that we're going to be able to watch this, like seeing Carrie and Big and Miranda and Steve and Harry. And like, I wonder who's going to be divorced, who's going to have kids, like, there's going to be some, like, who's no longer friends. I mean, I'm really curious to see how they're going to handle the Samantha not coming back of it all.
Yeah, I wonder what the reason is going to be that they're going to write. To be determined, you guys.
Literally can't wait to go on that journey with you guys.
I mean, cannot wait. That is our episode. We love you. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Couldn't Help But Wonder. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at CHBWPod, and follow my co-host Rose Cerno on Insta and Twitter at Rose Cerno. And please follow my co-host Jamie at ReallyJamieLee on Instagram and at TheJamieLee on Twitter. And please rate, review, subscribe to our show on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app if you're nasty. It helps us, it helps you, it helps everyone.
You nasty.
Bye.
Bye.
Forever.
This has been a Forever Dog production, executive produced by Joe Cilio, Alex Ramsey, and Brett Boehm. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcast.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Forever Dog Team and liking our page on Facebook.